Welcome, Green Future Growers. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am super excited to introduce my feature guest today because it's somebody I met through the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. One of the amazing Green Future Grower listeners out there, I had asked if she was interested in talking with us, and she said that she wasn't ready, but she said, I have this great guest. She's the children's garden. She works at the children's garden at Wood End Sanctuary, and she's, which is the home of the Audubon Naturalist Society of the Mid-Atlantic States. Welcome to the show today, Jennifer, and we're just super excited to hear about everything.
I'm excited to tell you about it.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself first?
Okay. Well, I work with children, and this came about because I remember, of course, working with my mom and more my grandmother. Every summer we would go to upstate New York and visit her and my mother's relatives. And they all had lots of land and things like an extensive raspberry patch, which was always fun for us to go down and pick raspberries or go up and look at the asparagus growing or the herbs growing that my grandmother had in her garden. So I feel like that got the foundation got laid early on, as it does for most people. But of course, I ignored it for many years. And it wasn't until my late 20s, early 30s that I started to take it on as a hobby and learn about it. And the story I tell is that the first thing I grew was tulips. And I planted them in front of my row house in D.C. and was so excited. And they came out and they were beautiful. Hello.
Hi, Jennifer. Sorry, you were right in the middle of like this eloquent little sweet story about the tulips. Okay.
I can back up with the tulip story.
Sure. Okay. Go right ahead. Okay.
So about my late 20s, I was living in a group house in Washington, D.C. and had a patch of ground in front and some yard in the back. And so I decided to grow things. And one of the things I planted in the fall was tulips. And they came up in the spring and they were beautiful. And I decided to cut a whole bunch to take to a friend. And I did. And she was so impressed. And I thought that more would grow. And I was so shocked that that was it. Each plant was only going to have one tulip and for that season. And I thought, oh, I thought I knew something about gardening, but it was clear that I had very much to learn, which has been the theme of my life in gardening, is that there is always so much more to learn. And so I plant with these students, with kids of all ages, and I'm constantly learning. So, for instance, this year I decided to grow amaranth because I wanted to know more about it. And we are learning along the way. I'm hoping this week that we will try sauteing it and to see what that tastes like. So that's sort of the theme of my gardening, is showing kids that even old people like myself are learning something new every day.
Oh, I love all of that.
Good.
So now it's the odd, like where are you at a woodland sanctuary?
Yes. So, Audubon Natural Society is one of the oldest Audubons in the country. Teddy Roosevelt even belonged to it apparently at one point, and it had kind of no home for a very long time, various places in Washington, D.C. And then I think along and about in the 1960s, a woman who had built a 40-acre estate in Chevy Chase, Maryland, donated it to, and it became the home of Audubon Natural Society. And it's a beautiful site, and many weddings take place there. That's one way they raise money. And their mission, of course, is environmental education. So I went to work for them in 2008 as an environmental educator, although I'm not trained in that specifically. We are a very small group wanting to work with schools to bring more green education. And I quickly decided that I would really like to know more about gardening of native plants and then gardening vegetables. And so I took that on sort of as a way for me to grow into the job and to learn more. And then there were two raised beds on the site that I've never even looked into the history of, but they were right near the historic greenhouse, which no longer operates as a greenhouse. It doesn't have the glass on it anymore, but the base is there. And it also had a water supply. It had everything I needed. And since that time, that's about 5 years ago, it's tripled in size.
Wow. Now, I guess my question is, did the same kids come? How many kids come? Are they coming from schools on buses, or they're just local neighborhood? Like, who are the kids?
Okay, so the kids are three different groups. There are busloads of kids who come throughout the school year to visit Audubon and get some activities about the environment. There's a stream on site, so they'll go down and search for macroinvertebrates in the stream and learn that that's a way to assess the health of the water in the area. So far they don't make official visits to my vegetable garden because usually during the school year it's somewhat fallow.
Right.
You know, not that, that much
well,
going
that's
on.
Where I'm getting to. That's what I'm wondering. Who's
yeah.
coming right now?
Well, then we also have a very active summer camp program, a day camp that parents sign their kids up for by the week or even several weeks. And then during the school year, we also have what are called school days out camp. And those are a holiday from school that parents need to find something for their kids to do. So they pay for the day to come. And that turns out to be a great opportunity, like in the fall, to continue harvesting or even, you know, quickly sow a lettuce crop or something that they can see if they return over the several fall holidays. And then in the spring, we have, of course, spring break, and I get an enormous amount done with the kids then preparing for the summer season. And I ask them, oh, if you're coming back for summer camp, remember what you planted. We'll see what it looks like now. So things like that.
Oh, my gosh. These are great ideas. I'll bet there's tons of listeners out there just like me thinking, how can I incorporate this into my community? Where could this? Because that's always been like a big question of mine is, you know, school's out during the biggest growing season during, I mean, granted, you know, lots of schools, like you said, have summer programs. That's becoming, seems much more popular these days. So, but to do something over spring break, I haven't heard of that idea. Or during, we don't have much for holidays at my school, I have to say.
Right.
But,
we also have on site a nature preschool. And it is, you know, for three-year-olds to five-year-olds, various different classes. And one that this happened this last year that I'm so excited about is their nature, I'm going to forget the name, Forest Oaks is their name. And their little ones, five-year-olds, not ready for kindergarten, the parents have decided, who they basically roam the estate and learn all kinds of things in nature and come to the garden regularly. And that teacher is fabulous for having them, you know, plant peas very early, just explore in the garden. You know, she feels comfortable using my garden for them. And so I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. You know, I met these amazing girls. Now I'm trying to think, where was that one girl from, Maryland? I wonder if you even know her. She taught. The class was, so I went to this training after school got out, and the last session I got to go to was using a garden in early childhood education. And she she taught us all about, you know, the connections you could make, and it was very geared towards pre-K, which was interesting because we were at there were all sorts of different age, but I would say the majority of teachers were, you know, either elementary school or high school teachers even. But there was, their thing was pretty crowded. There were probably 40 participants there from all around the state of Montana, different teachers. And there were probably like three preschool teachers in the room. But still, it was just, you know, the project, you could use them across the grades. You know, there was plenty. She just really, talked about gardening. But they talked about the college that I was at had the oldest preschool in the state dating back to like 1912 or something. But I love to hear that they're doing more gardening with preschoolers.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
so how big
and
is...
now we have... Oh. I'm sorry. Now we have on staff a woman who is, I think, a PhD in mushrooms. And so I'm really excited to learn more about mushroom growing, too. So, you know, we're all learning from each other, which is great.
Oh, I love that. And to always be learning. And it's true, because, like, even no matter how much you know about gardening, the climate is changing so, and every season is so different that you're always adapting to different changes anyway. So even if you knew how to grow peas 20 years ago, it might be different how you're going to grow them now. Like, I know Mike and I are finding that. And then you're always just, I don't know, it seems like we're always expanding and changing things and definitely always mm-hmm. learning. So,
right.
So tell us about the amaranth. Where did you get the amaranth? How did that grow? Was that something that grew well this year?
It did grow well, and lots of the places I looked up information about it warned me that it's rather aggressive. So I'm about to find out what that means in terms mm-hmm. of will I suddenly find it popping up everywhere. Now, I gardened there, I raised beds, so it feels like I can control it a little bit. One of the reasons I wanted it, the kind of amaranth I picked was called Hopi Red Dye Amaranth. Mm-hmm. One of the camps we have is called ethnobotany. And so for a week, the kids learn about how human beings have interacted with plants for their needs, like weaving things. You know, we have and run that camp, so I'm not that knowledgeable about it, but finding various dyes. And so when I saw it said Hopi red dyes, my goodness, that's Native Americans, which we love to emphasize learning from them. And as far as I know, it's the flower, which is a deep magenta colored right now. And that camp starts next week. So I'm very excited to try picking some of that flower and see if it makes a nice dye. Apparently, the Hopi dyed their bread with it. And why would you want to have red or pink bread? But why not? So we're going to find out what it actually does. But then I thought, well, is that the only use of the amaranth? And then I was just reading yesterday, oh, no, you can saute the leaves. I tried tasting them raw. They're not too appealing. But we'll find out if they taste good cooked up.
Yeah, well, there's probably lots of things that don't taste so good raw that taste better when you cook them. That's interesting. So why did you pick amaranth? Because I'm pretty sure I bought amaranth seeds this year. I don't think they actually got into the garden, but I think there was did they bring in pollinators? Is it a good companion plant? Like, I'm trying to even remember why I bought it.
Yeah.
But I was like going through the seed packets the other day and I saw it and mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, I was going to plant this.
So it's about 4 feet tall now, carefree. I haven't had to do a thing. I have it interplanted with calendula. Again, it was mostly trying to offer something to this ethnobotany camp. Those students are a little bit older, so I wanted more challenges for myself and for them. There also, we had some bamboo on the site. We still have some. We're trying to get rid of it. You know, it's 40 acres. It's a lot to manage, but... one of the leaders is figuring out a way to make me some trellises out of the bamboo, have the kids do that. So that I'm excited about too.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Anything to like, yeah. I always like when there's like stuff. I was thinking about that the other day, like what makes a garden. I was looking at these pictures on a website, and to me, what makes a garden is like, when you have all those little handmade things in between made out of like natural things, like, you know, like rock walkways or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. any
yeah.
kind of like
yeah.
little wooden thing somebody makes or a sign or a decoration. Like, it just kind of like, I don't know, puts like a more of a, I don't know, like a caring feel to it or something. I don't know how to explain it.
Yes,
anyway,
right. Instead of buying store-bought stuff. Yes, I'm with you.
Yeah. So is there something you're excited to try next year that you've never done before? That's kind of the same thing, kind of trying something new, but I don't know.
Well, I'm ready to plunge into grapes, I think.
Ooh.
Very scary because I have seen how fast they grow. We often have, we have a big volunteer body of people, shall we say,
nice.
Who we also train at, we're a site for training master naturalists, And then as part of, you know, I don't know if you've been Master Gardeners and Master Naturalists, they have an ongoing commitment to community service to maintain their eligibility. And so Master Naturalists are always looking for projects. And along that, we have Eagle Scouts who come to us who are looking for projects to earn their final, whatever that's called, you know, to get the Eagle.
Their badge.
Eagle status. Yeah, their badge. And so we find, you know, we make suggestions to them. So, for instance, we had one Eagle Scout troop build a mason bee structure.
I was just thinking about doing that yesterday. Because we don't have our bees. We got honeybees and they died. They didn't make it through the winter again this year. And so we didn't get new ones this year. And I have not seen any bees anywhere on our property, hardly at all this year. Like even like regular. And so I was thinking, I saw a mason bee workshop this spring. We had a thing called the seed fair and they were making. So I was just thinking of that yesterday. Okay. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
But do you want to tell listeners what that is if they don't know?
Well, and where I saw it was when I first became a master gardener, the master gardeners in Montgomery County knew that I was particularly interested in working with children. So they very kindly gave me a grant to go to the American Horticulture Society's convention for that year, which was at Michigan State. And there I saw a fantastic children's garden, and part of it was one of these mason bee structures. And the way, so I just took a picture of it and I handed it to the Eagle Scout, and he figured out how to do it. It's just on two big poles, and the mason bees apparently like small tubes to climb into. So I think they're about a quarter or a half inch depth, and if they're just stacked up, a whole bunch of them, and they can be made out of, you know, you could drill holes in a log, any kind of thing like that, and that's apparently where they were built there.
The ones that I saw, they took like a coffee can and filled it full of, they just rolled up newspaper. They made the tubes out of newspaper and just filled it up. That's
so
what these kids
like
were
that.
Doing at this. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, so anyway, back to what I think I might be ready for next year is having an Eagle Scout build me the structure to grow muscadine grapes, which are apparently native to southeastern United States. So, and the main thing is having enough room for that. So, but I'm excited to learn along the way how to take care of them.
Excellent. We have two grape plants. Mike tried to build a grape arbor, and they're growing strong. The vines are strong. Having something to have them grow on, a structure, is important. I think a good structure there. Do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well this season?
Well, can I first tell you about something that grew really well this year? Finally, I did it successfully, which, again, with the Native American theme, is the Three Sisters Garden. And we finally, first time, and it could be that I'm there more often now this summer, but we harvested corn day before yesterday, 3 ears of beautiful eating corn. And the kids cut it off the cob to saute it with our zucchini, but I have the beans growing. I have everything happening. So I was really excited about that, all three things. And maybe I attribute it to the fact that at the spring break camp, we made the mounds, and I did go to a fish market and get 3 fish heads. And the kids, of course, loved that, you know, fish heads going into the soil. So that's something to try if you're thinking of doing a Three Sisters garden. Remember to add the fish.
Okay. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because Mike planted his corn and then planted his beans this year for the first time. Just the other day, I took a video of the beans coming up, but I do not think he planted the 3 fish heads underneath. So we'll see. We'll have to try to remember that next year. Cool.
I love that. Well, and then I thought, how fun for the fall days out camps. Because the corn will be done by then, we can dig in and see if we find the skulls of the fish. So I think they'll like that as a little archaeology dig.
Oh, I'm so curious. I'm going to call you back then and see, or send you an email and see if you found them. Because, and that'll probably be right when this episode airs. You know, I'm still pretty behind. Like, I just posted an interview I did in March yesterday and one in February, like, this week. Like, I'm, because I actually teach on a reservation with Native Americans during the school year. And so today is Friday, July 14th, Bastille Day. And so my summer vacation, I feel like it just started, even though we get out June 9th. I don't know. So So I'm fascinated to hear about all this. I don't think you will find the skulls. I think they're going to be decomposed, but maybe not. I guess the skull is bigger than the, I'm thinking, you know, I would definitely think that their spines are, I don't know. And I guess it depends on how big a fish, you know, like what kind of fish were they?
Do you know? They were catfish. And they were chopped in half. It was like one and a half, one whole one and two halves of one, because I had the three mounds. So we shall see.
All right. Cool. I love that. Yeah, the kids will totally dig that. Did you take pictures before and like while you were burying them?
Yes, yes.
Oh, cool. Excellent. All right. So this, wait, you haven't told us. So what didn't work so well then?
Oh, what didn't work well is one of the other things. I'm a total scavenger, and we have bits of fencing and, you know, old poles and things like that. And so I tried to put the cucumbers in a new area. And so I had the kids at spring break build a kind of structure that they'd be able to crawl through, thinking that the cucumbers would hang down and that would be fun for them to go in this nice shady spot and find the cucumbers. Well, I forgot that we are still contending with deer. Even though we have fencing up this new area of the garden, they are able to get in. And they had never bothered cucumbers before because they're a little bit spiny, but they have been munching away at the cucumber vines. And so the hut is, the covered over hut is that I envisioned is not happening this year. We'll have to try again next year.
Aww. Well, good to hear about that mistake. You know, we had a similar, and I keep telling Mike it's a blessing. He's still complaining about it. At the beginning of the, like right after I got out of school, so it would have been like the first week in June, or the second week in June, the deer got into the garden and they ate almost all of his broccoli and his peppers and a lot, some of his peas and like the tops of the garden. But I feel like it was almost a good thing because everything's growing back. Yes, I don't have broccoli right now, and there is a chance that's going to be so hot when it does come, it's going to bolt. So I might not get the broccoli that I wanted. He planted so many broccolis. They were so good because broccoli is a very cooler weather here. But I feel like it's made us more vigilant. Like if the deer got in there now, it would be so much more crushing. You know, the beans are up, the corn's up. Like there's so much. Everything's just been coming on. And I feel like in a way, so, you know, deer, mistakes, it's all part of gardening.
Well, and I think that if they do munch it early, what I've noticed, because we have cardinal flower around here. Do you have that?
No, what's that?
It's a native plant, beautiful pollinator plant, scarlet red, tall, lobelia is the Latin name for it. Canadensis, I think, is the whole name. Anyway, munched the top of it early on, and then, of course, it didn't kill the plant, so two or three more leaders came up. So I had actually had more flowers when it was time for it to bloom. You know, it was kind of like a natural pruning down, and that can happen with like I have that happening with zinnias now. So they haven't killed the plant, it just causes more stems to reach out. So yeah, so long as I can keep them off now, I'll have actually more flowers than I would have had. So
all right, well maybe I'll end up with more broccolis. Wouldn't that be awesome? Because I feel like I can never have enough broccoli. Like Mike and I, our goal, well, it's mostly Mike's goal, he does all the work, is to grow like enough produce that we don't really have to like to really supplement our produce bill as much as possible. And so we've just been like growing more. We didn't really have a lot of water until the last 2 years, even though we've been here for 25 years. So that's where we're at. It's kind of exciting to see more growing.
Right. Do you suffer from harlequin bugs? Have you seen those on your broccoli and cabbage and kind of things? I suffered from
I
them
think
last year. It was terrible. It was they because they
I
destroyed the plant more, so I was unhappy with them. I decided not to do any culls this year just to discourage them because I figured they were in the soil and they'd come back. I don't know.
You know, that could be. I feel like we've had harlequin bugs. I know for many years, Mike just would like get really frustrated with cabbages every year. And then lately he's been growing really good cabbages. I don't know what he's doing about the harlequin bugs. I feel like I've heard other listeners talk about using diatomaceous earth, but that stuff just gives me the willies. I like your plan to like not plant any brassicas this year and then see if they kind of go away out of the dirt.
Right.
I'll have to look into that.
And
okay,
the cabbage butterflies, at least they don't kill the plant. I had kale last year and they made it look awful, but once they were gone, it came just back just fine. But we're in such a mild climate, we can grow kale throughout the year. So it's a different story for you all up there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I got to tell you, gardening's a challenge. I'm amazed that Mike does what he does because it seems like you're waiting for everything to, like, you know, for it to be warm enough. And we had a really late spring. And then all of a sudden, my lettuce just, you know, bolted on me so fast this week. We had a whole week of 98 degree days. And then, I don't know, just like I said, summer feels like it's going to be over before I can blink. And then, but he does have, I mean, he has a lot growing, so.
Yeah.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Organifi Green Juice is a gently dried superfood mix that supports health, mental clarity, while detoxifying your body all in one delicious drink. What I love about Organifi, it makes me feel great. It's easy. It doesn't take much time. It's full of nutrients and superfoods that I have a hard time getting anywhere else. And it just tastes delicious. Now, as a teacher, you all know that our time is totally limited. I have kids in my classroom from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. So just even using this simple thing can be difficult for me, but I can pull it off and so can you. If you want to feel good and get all your greens in a simple, easy drink, remember you can get a discount as an Organic Gardener podcast listener by entering code OGP16 and Organifi will give you a 15% discount now. So just go to Organifi.com and when you go to checkout, enter code OGP16, and they'll give you 15% off your order anytime. Know how to create a small market garden that can feed 200 families and create a generous income? Have you ever wanted to learn how to do manual labor that's pleasant, lucrative, and very much in keeping with a healthy lifestyle? Maybe you just wanted to learn how to improve the quality of your own soil while maximizing crop yields. G. Martin Fortier discusses biologically intensive farming in his great book, The Market Gardener. Mike and I have both read this book. We've poured through it. We've used lots of the tips and techniques here in our own garden, growing our own food. And so if you'd like to get a copy of Jean-Martin Fortier's awesome book, The Market Gardener, from Amazon, you can also help the Organic Gardener Podcast by simply going to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com. And at the top, there's the recommended books, where you can get a copy of Jean-Martin Fortier's The Market Gardener or any of the other books that have been recommended on our show, and also support the Organic Gardener podcast with just a tiny bit, but every bit helps. Okay, so this is where I call the part of the show where we're going to get to the root of things, and it's kind of like a lightning round or just like quicker questions. So,
sure, yeah.
Jennifer, what's your favorite? Or is there an activity that's your least favorite to do, like something you've got to force yourself to go down there and do in the garden?
You know, oddly enough, it's watering. And it's because I feel like I'm never patient enough. There's never enough time to give it a really good water. So I'm sort of stressed the whole time. Am I giving it enough water? Am I giving? It's not a not a relaxing part of it.
It is not odd. I totally understand. And I feel like we cannot We can't just like, if we watered 24/7, we couldn't get all the areas. Like, it's so big here now what Mike's done, because he put in like a mini orchard, and then he's got his mini farm, and then just like keeping the fire danger around, because we're in like Northwest Montana, like just the lawn around our house, just to make sure it's green, just God forbid. And then I totally understand. I feel like there's never enough time for watering. But then I was thinking back to the, we used to have to haul water. And so I've been kind of like carrying some buckets down in my, you know, just like a little watering can. And when I do that, I think back to what it was like for years. Like, we had a water truck for many years that could haul like 1500 gallons, and Mike would go fill that up. But we have done a lot of hand watering. Mike's grown a lot of food for people who didn't have water over the years. Yeah. And I totally understand water, especially it seems like this year it's, to me, more than ever. We're just constantly watering everything. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's been a really dry year. I think Mike did say it's been a hotter year in Montana than usual. So,
really?
On the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, I wrote down weeding, and I think it is. I like kind of keeping the problems at bay and tidying it up. So, probably too revealing about my character that I like cleaning up, but I don't mind weeding at all. So.
Cool. No, I always say it's like wiping the chalkboard clean to me, and it does make your beds nice, and it can be really therapeutic. I just sometimes it gets overwhelming. Mike's really good about staying on top of his weeds, but I don't know. He's been complaining this summer, but he did tell me yesterday. He's like, I just about have all the mulch down, and you know, unless a weed or two pops up here, we should be done from here on out. He's about got her. Now it's just keeping the bugs out, keeping it watered, like you said, and hoping things grow well. How about the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Well, this year I went to a class in the spring. It's called Rooting DC, and they have a conference every spring in DC. And I went to it this year for the first time. And one of the classes I took was about companion planting. And it was given by a teacher. And she had a wonderful book that I have not picked up yet, but it's a book for young students that she uses. And it's all about what plants do well together. And so I really tried to follow those simple ideas. And when I tell even adults about getting started in gardening, it's easy things like a pizza garden. All the things that go on a pizza actually do well together. Or pickles, that dill and cucumber do well together, and then the Three Sisters garden. You know, they're all, the companion planting is the I really think is great advice.
I love that. I'm gonna look and see. I almost think it's probably the same woman, and she had tons of books. I took pictures of the covers of all the books she had. How about a favorite tool that you'd like to use? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
I would be lost without a trowel. I think a trowel is very handy because it's a mini shovel, and but it does give you that, you know, a lot of times I talk with kids about physics. Not that I was ever trained in physics, but my thought is that when they're young, to have them not be intimidated by the idea of going into physics. And even a trowel exhibits the basics of human beings using tools to make work easier. And so there's leverage going on there. So I travel.
I love all of that. I worked with a teacher, and now she's teaching art in the middle school. But when we taught in first grade together, she taught like a special called first grade physics is what she called it. And it was very similar to what you're talking about, just like getting kids used to it and making them feel confident that they could do things like that. It was a great class.
Right.
The kids always came out of there. I just felt like that's what school should be like. It was fun. Incorporating science and then reading and math and into the science instead of just constantly teaching, this is how we read, this is what a letter sound is. Like, just getting them excited to read about what they're doing.
Right. What they're curious about. Really following their lead in the garden. Because over the years, I talk less and less. I just want them to explore. And then if they have questions, I'm happy to answer them. But just let them explore.
I agree. That's awesome. They're so lucky to have you.
Thank you.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Okay, last year, or actually the year before, we made tabbouleh a lot because I had a lot of parsley. And so I'm hoping to be successful again this year. And that's mint. I've got plenty of mint and parsley, tomatoes. And the only thing that I, two things I have to bring, three things, olive oil, lemon juice, and the bulgur wheat. So that comes from outside. And then last year, I also grew kohlrabi for the first time. And I got a great recipe that's kohlrabi apple salad. So people can look, you know, just Google that and see if you can find that. And then hopefully next week, we're going to do a French potato salad. When we lift up our potatoes, we'll do a, it's just a vinegar and oil and tarragon. And I think shallots in it. So those are my three.
Awesome. I think that's wonderful. Do you, what do you eat with the tabbouleh? That's kind of like a salad, right? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all, everything's up chopped up. And it's nice when there's a recipe that everybody gets a chance to chop. So tabbouleh is great for that because the parsley needs to be chopped, the tomatoes. Oh, and cucumber. I forgot cucumbers in there. We often have a lot of cucumbers. So it gives something to everyone to cut up. And add and mix together. And that's a Middle Eastern dish, yeah. So it's a salad.
Yeah, I haven't had tabbouleh in years, but that sounds good. I might go ahead and make some. Cool, and that's exposing kids to new foods that they probably haven't tried before. So then do you put it like on a bed of lettuce or do you eat it with chips or... I guess that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, just, I think just with the fork. Yeah, I suppose, I doubt we'll have lettuce ready at that point. So probably they'll just dig in with their forks.
So. Oh, cool. Okay, how about a favorite internet resource? Is there anywhere you like to go on the internet?
Well, I have to give a shout out to the University of Maryland's extension program. They have a website called Grow It, Eat It. And this came about a number of years ago when I, again, when I was first becoming a master gardener, the head of University Extension for Maryland initiated a program to get 1 million Marylanders growing some of their own food, starting gardening. And so I'm part of that group that advocates for everyone growing some of their food to see what it's like, to have appreciation for what's needed, and to enjoy their food.
You know, I went to, when I first moved to Montana, I went to college, or maybe not when I first moved here, but when I went back to get my education degree, there was a teacher in one of my classes, and she just like, I grew up in New York and always wanted to move to Montana, and she was from Montana and always wanted to move to Maryland. She's like, doesn't it just sound beautiful? Maryland. And she just wanted to go there so bad. So, how about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or even a blog or a website that you can recommend?
Well, what popped to mind, and I had to look it up because I was so sad, I actually gave this book away a number of years ago, but I would recommend if people are in, I was wanting to read more about the history of the world, and I came across this, and it's called An Edible History of Humanity, and the author's name is Tom Standage. And it's delightful. My memory of it was really eye-opening.
Sorry, Jennifer.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. So was it Tom Standage?
Yeah, so a favorite book I read, I don't know how many years ago. It's An Edible History of Humanity by Tom Standage. And in it, the one fun fact that I remember was that human beings were actually taller when we were in the hunter-gatherer stage. And he attributed this to the fact that we had a wider variety of food to eat. And that when we went to these big crops, you know, you'd eat all of the same thing, and that we actually got shorter then. So I'm happy now that people are getting much more interested in a wide variety of fruit and vegetables, and we clearly are getting taller. I don't know if we can attribute it to that, but there's other lots of interesting ideas to think about in our relationship with the development of food, you know, how we've changed food to suit us, or maybe their plants are getting us to suit them. I don't know.
Interesting. I go back and forth. Mike and I were just talking about that the other day between, like, is it better to be taller? Like, he's a lot taller than I am. So when I look at him, you know, it's easier for him to walk and carry heavier things because he's stronger. But then I think, you know, shorter is probably easier for being closer to the ground for picking vegetables and stuff. So I couldn't decide.
That's true.
I was finding reasons for both.
Yeah, I'm very short and my husband's very tall. So yeah, we each have our things that we shine at, right?
Mm-hmm. So I kind of here ask business advice, but like, do you have any advice for like getting involved, like volunteering, or, you know, how you came about finding your position at Audubon, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have kids in their 20s now and I am watching and trying to keep my mouth closed about trying to give any advice because I don't remember wanting any advice at that age, but, really just follow your interests, you know. It as weird as they may be, or as you're thinking there's no way to make money at it, there really is. If you've got a passion for it, someone will figure out, or you will figure out a way to make money from it. So
nice,
you know, to be employed. Yeah, you know.
I like that. Okay, so here's my final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, Jennifer, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, this question is perfect for me because, cool. Yes, I have great fondness and respect and belief in the Audubon Natural Society's mission of the Mid-Atlantic states. You know, our particular one, I can't really speak to any other Audubon Natural Societies, although I believe they're all devoted to environmental education. And one of our missions is to have absolutely no stormwater runoff coming from the 40 acres. And we've taken that commitment as a microcosm to show hopefully that we can do it and that people around us can be aware of what stormwater runoff, you know, being near the Chesapeake Bay, that's a huge issue for us in this area. And so if we can model that, we can do that on the scale we're on, and we have a stream to deal with. We have a lot of issues with water runoff and we're doing things. So part of my project has been to grow an orchard on a slope and try to stop the water from going downhill so fast. We're using hugel culture, which is a Swiss thing, to build mounded areas to grow more crops and also to slow the water. So I tell the kids all the time, maybe some of you will become water engineers out of working on this, understanding the role of water in our world and, of course, in our soil, how everything's interrelated. That's what keeps me interested in all of this.
Aww. So do you want to kind of explain maybe to listeners who've never heard of stormwater runoff or why it would be bad?
Yes. So stormwater runoff is an issue for us in this area. And the I think there are 7 states that water runs into the Chesapeake Bay. And the issue is that when it runs off and there are pesticides and herbicides and the natural erosion, which is accelerated, what's dumped into the bay creates dead zones for the aquatic life there. And so the idea is to figure out how to slow that water down so it actually sinks into the water table and recharges there rather than dumping into the bay.
That was excellent. I was thinking I had a friend, Mary, who I went to high school with, who lives in New Jersey, and I could have sworn she lives on the edge of the Chesapeake Bay too, but she probably does, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably one of the states that goes into
maybe it may, you know, there's a funny line where as it goes northeast, it actually becomes a different watershed. But New York, I know, is the high northernmost point, and it would be Delaware, probably Maryland, some of Virginia, Pennsylvania for sure. The Susquehanna River is the main river dumping into the top of the Chesapeake Bay. So, and then then there's issues with farmers and keeping the discharge from the animals from running in there. So it's complicated. And, you know, I don't want to be against anyone. I just want to say, let's figure out how to get this water from running into the bay. So.
Yeah. I just think that's great for people to be thinking about. And I know a lot of my listeners that I'm sure that's going to be their concern. So I think you've really inspired some people today to think, you know, maybe there is something I can do to inspire the younger people in, you know, my community. Or, you know, I don't necessarily have to do it full time, like you're talking about these little week-long workshops, or just come spend a day and teach something. So I think listeners are just going to be so glad you came and talked with us today. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Just so you know, I don't work full time. So if people are overwhelmed and saying, oh, I'm not going to devote my whole life to this, I'm very much a part-time worker. So it is doable on a smaller scale too.
I love that. How about an inspirational tip or a quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
The only rule I give my kids coming in there is don't step on anything green. And they seem to follow that well enough. So that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge and expertise and just your passion for caring for our environment, because I don't know if I told you this, but like I call my audience the green future growers, because we're all working to grow a greener future. And just, I think you're one of the visionaries that they all, you know, either are very similar to or strive to be. And I just love the way that you're really caring for our children. Like my husband and I, we, you know, both are very passionate about, you know, educating the future and getting kids to enjoy nature and care about the environment so much more. So thank you so much.
I'm glad you are. Yeah, because if nothing else, it's just to see how happy all kids seem to be in the garden and excited to be there. It's reward enough.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Jennifer.
Progressive Radio Network listeners, this is Jackie Marie Beyer live on Sunday, October 8th. Just wrapping up this recording, my interview I did with the amazing Jennifer Brown from the Audubon Naturalist Society down in Maryland, from Washington, D.C., the Children's Garden at Wood End Sanctuary, Audubon Naturalist Society of the Mid-Atlantic States. So I hope you enjoyed that interview, and just I had a few minutes left over, so I just thought I'd talk about some things that are going on in our garden. So we live in the Northern Rocky Mountains. If you don't know about Mike and my's journey yet, I originally grew up in New York, but I've been in Montana since the late 80s, early 90s. We got married in 1993. So, and we originally didn't have running water, so our gardening journey's really taken off in the last few years. We dug a deep well. So Mike planted a mini farm, and so this weekend he harvested the last 100 ears of corn, I think, he got out of our this little mini farm he grew. So that was really neat to see him get so much corn. It's so good. And I was posting on Facebook the other day or somewhere that this woman, Sally Fallon from the Weston A. Price Foundation, was telling me that a lot of vegetables need butter or some kind of healthy fat to mix with them so you can get the actual mineral and all the good nutritious things that you're trying to get out of your vegetables. So it's hard for me to actually put butter on the corn because I'm so used to eating it just raw the way it is, maybe a little salt and pepper. I haven't put, so I've been working on that. And then I also harvested several cabbages today and made the most delicious coleslaw. And one of the few blog posts that I've actually written on my website that's not a you know, show notes for a podcast is my coleslaw recipe. So if you want that, you can just go to the Organic Gardener podcast and either go back and blog post or just Google coleslaw recipe, I mix carrots and craisins and walnuts and kind of make it into a rainbow, just a yummy, delicious. And I find that if I wait a little while, the cabbages tend to be a little spicier, and that kind of gives them an extra boost of flavor there. And then I also harvested possibly my last Swiss chard. We cut a bunch of sunflowers for the kids I'm going to take to school and let the after school kids pick the seeds out. Maybe even my regular class will do it for science, some kind of investigation, and they can see. One thing I was saying is that, see, the reason I always feel like I need to get my sunflowers in the ground on Earth Day back in the beginning of April is because a lot of these giant heads, the seeds are just not ready. They're not. So I don't know if we plant them next year, if they're going to make sunflowers or not, or what they're going to do. And then Mike certainly harvested some carrots. I think he's gotten all the potatoes out of the ground by now. Definitely our biggest year. We've been eating out of the garden pretty much full time since, I don't know, mid-July. So I haven't really had to buy any produce for August, September. Maybe a little lettuce if I really needed it. But there's been so many other things. I've been eating tons of Swiss chard. So good. And it turned this really bright red color. So I really enjoyed that. I think it's just got to be super nutritious. So that's how our garden grows. And just if you have any questions, if there's anything we can do, if there's things you'd like to learn about, people you'd like me to reach out to, you know, don't hesitate to email me. Some of you already have, which is so cool. Since we joined the Progressive Radio Network, it's just been really neat to hear from some of you. And, you know, if there's anything you'd like to learn or things you're struggling with or just anything we can do to help you with your organic gardening journey. Sorry, as a teacher, I'm pretty tired usually. Always running between trying to keep the podcast going and keep my lesson plans up to date, my grade book. So I'm going to close out and go to bed. But Jackie Beyer live here. Would love if you join the Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. Check out our page on Facebook. Check out our website. And just anything we can do, please let us know. We're here to help you on your garden journey and just help you learn to grow some food, because it's sure fun. I've got my little windowsill bed of lettuce and things that are time to go. Signing out. Have a great one.
Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.